Welcome to this IFRS Foundation podcast, which will focus on the March meeting of the International Accounting Standards Board. The meeting took place in London on the 21st and 22nd of March 2018. My name is Matt Tilling, and I'm the Director of Education here at the Foundation. Today I'm joined by the Vice Chair, Sue Lloyd, and one of the other board members, Daryl Scott, to talk through the latest meeting and other developments. Let's start with what happened during the March meeting. In last month's meeting, the Disclosure Initiative team presented a summary of the feedback received to our consultation on the principles of disclosure. This month, there was quite a lot of discussion about the next steps for this project. Sue.
Yes, so this is an important project that's part of our Better Communication and Financial Reporting umbrella of projects. And our aim in the Disclosure Initiative is to make disclosures more effective. So we got quite a lot of feedback on our discussion paper that really encouraged us to be more focused and to really put our efforts into the proposals that are likely to be the most effective and the most efficient in improving disclosures on a timely basis. So basically this week we were discussing what we should prioritise in this project. So the board agreed that the first thing that we should work on is developing guidance for our own use, to look at improving the way that we write disclosure requirements. And once we've developed that, to basically use it to test, run a pilot, if you like, of one or two of our standards. So we'd work on improving the disclosure requirements in one or two standards. And our objective would be to improve the requirements so that when they're applied, it would improve the effectiveness of the disclosures that are provided to people reading the financial statements. And I think it's important to point that out for expectations management. So our objective isn't to reduce the volume of disclosure requirements per se, although that might be a consequence, but our focus is really on effectiveness. So the staff are going to bring back a proposal to us for a later meeting where they will make some recommendations on which standard or couple of standards we might choose to do this test run. And then, as is usual for our projects, if we propose changes to any disclosure requirements in our standard, we'll expose those for comment. And by doing that, sort of indirectly, people will also get the opportunity to comment on the guidance that we've come up with to try and improve our own drafting of disclosure requirements. So in addition to that, the staff also have agreed to bring us back a paper that's basically going to confirm the relationships between the different aspects of the Better Communication projects, so that we can try and be more comfortable with our, more clear with our messaging, and also to check that we're comfortable with how those interactions work. And also the staff will bring us back some analysis at a later date on how we should respond to some of the comments that have been raised more broadly about technology and digital reporting and that relevance for disclosure. Now, as part of the increased focus, we also decided not to do any further work on a few areas that were in the Principles of Disclosure discussion paper. So, for example, we had some proposals on developing principles of effective communication. We decided not to do further work on that. And we also confirmed that the feedback that we got on some other topics would be considered in the scope of other projects. So one example of that is that there were some questions in the discussion paper about the presentation of EBIT and EBITDA, and the board has agreed that that feedback will be considered as part of the primary financial statements project rather than as part of the disclosure initiative.
So it seems a bit of an ongoing theme that I always get to ask you the exciting questions about dynamic risk management. And this week at the board, it was all about target profiles.
Yes, so the exciting topic of dynamic risk management. And I like to pride myself on being able to explain complicated things simply. But I think that, to be honest, describing the specific discussion we had this month on a podcast is probably a bit of a challenge. So I think it's better for people who are really interested in this topic to look at the papers and an update. But having said that, as a general proposition, what we've been talking about is how when financial institutions work out their interest rate hedging strategies, they look at the interest-bearing assets that they hold, they look at the funding they've got in place, and they look at what net interest income that combination would produce. And then we know that what they do is they compare that with what their target or desired net interest income profile is and work out what sort of hedging or derivatives they need to enter into to get to that target profile. And this month we're basically talking about some of the requirements around the target profile. But I think it's still fair to say we're at early stages of developing this project. So there's still a lot of work to be done, but it is an interesting project for people who specialise in this area. So I do commend the board papers to you to have a look at.
Daryl, turning to you, there was more discussion this month on rate-regulated activities.
Yes, I think this is also an exciting project, and we continued our discussions this month on specifically the accounting model that we're developing at the moment for activities subject to what we've termed defined rate regulation. This month we focused on two specific topics. The first of those topics was the scope of the model, how we would actually be scoping going forward. And the board decided that the accounting model should apply to defined rate regulation established through a formal regulatory framework, and then the important part that is enforceable on both the entity and the regulator, and that it contains a rate adjustment mechanism. The second topic we discussed was what the criteria should be for the initial recognition of regulatory assets and regulatory liabilities. Here the board decided in the first instance that regulatory assets or liabilities should be recognized when it is more likely or not that those rights and obligations actually exist. Now, by pinning the recognition criteria on the existence of the rights and obligations, what that essentially means is we don't consider in determining recognition whether or not there is a low probability of or high probability of inflows or outflows, and we don't consider whether or not there is a high level of measurement uncertainty. Both of those characteristics will be picked up when we discuss measurement in future months.
The board published exposure draft improvements to IFRS 8 operating segments in March 2017 in response to the findings from the post-implementation review of IFRS 8. Based on the feedback received, the board has reached a number of decisions. So I wonder, Daryl, if you might talk to us a bit about those.
Sure. So we had a detailed discussion about the feedback that we'd received on the exposure draft of proposed changes to IFRS 8. That exposure draft in turn was a result of the feedback that we had previously received on the post-implementation review we did on the standard. Our discussion at the board table also included consideration of how practice has evolved subsequently, taking account of recent comments that we've received on the exposure draft. So based on the feedback received and based on the subsequent changes in practice, the board identified a relatively narrow set of changes that we believed it would be beneficial for us to finalise. However, considering how narrow those changes would be, the board concluded in this meeting that the benefits of making those changes would not warrant the costs to both preparers and users that the changes would entail. So essentially, the board has decided not to take this project forward. Staff will publish a summary of the feedback we've received and the board's conclusions later in this year.
Sue, the board also discussed the feedback on the post-implementation review of IFRS 13.
Yeah, so sticking to the topic of post-implementation reviews as well. So we also discussed the feedback on the post-implementation review of IFRS 13, our fair value measurement standard, and the staff's recommendations for the next steps. And firstly, and very importantly, the board agreed that the feedback confirmed that IFRS 13 is working as intended, which is good to hear. We also received quite a bit of feedback, though, on the effectiveness of the IFRS 13 disclosures, and we received some suggestions for improvements. So the board also decided that we should ask the team that's working on the Principles of Disclosure project to consider IFRS 13 as a potential candidate in that analysis of standards in that pilot of improvements and drafting that I mentioned earlier in the podcast. We also got quite a bit of feedback, particularly I think from emerging economies, about some of the challenges that can arise in practice coming up with measurement of fair value. And we decided that rather than developing additional valuation guidance ourselves, which isn't our area of expertise, we should continue to liaise with the valuation profession and to promote knowledge development and sharing, you know, sort of in partnership with other people. Other than that, we decided that no further follow-up should be undertaken beyond that. So the staff will now prepare a feedback statement so that we will wrap up this post-implementation review as well.
Daryl, turning to you for the final area that was looked at the board this week, management commentary practice statement.
Yes, so as I imagine most will be aware, and as we've discussed in previous podcasts, The board is currently researching whether or not to update our existing management commentary practice statement. Now, this update will include as a key element the changes in wider corporate reporting that have begun to emerge over the last several years. And specifically, we'll consider how that additional reporting can more easily be integrated with existing financial reporting requirements under IFRSs. So at this month's meeting, we received an update on the progress the team is making in its research, and specifically, the team discussed the creation of the consultancy group on the project, and just a quick advert, the applications are due by the 20th of April for their consultancy group. The team also discussed the considerations of recent developments in the reporting frameworks outside of IFRSs that operate in the same space, and provided us with some thoughts on the approaches that they will be taking as they look to develop a roadmap for us. They also discussed what subjects the statement is likely to include when it's finally developed. This project is not yet at a decision-making phase, so the board wasn't called on to make any decisions during the process of the meeting.
Other than the board meeting, there were a few other important events and meetings in March.
Yes, as part of our ongoing engagement with both users and preparers, we met this month with both the Global Preparers Forum, the GPF, and the Capital Markets Advisory Committee, which is the CMAC. And both of these meetings provide the board with the opportunity to test our thinking with these two important constituencies. And importantly, both are held in public, the papers are published, and they webcast for people who are interested in what happens at the meetings. I think we had good discussions in both the meetings, with particularly good discussions on the topics of management performance measures and our Principles of Disclosures project.
And Sue, there was also a meeting of the IFRS Interpretations Committee, which you happened to chair. Would you like to tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. So we had quite a full day and quite a lot of different topics on the agenda, so I won't go into all of them in detail. But for people who are interested, we have published the update, which is the formal record of the meeting. But I think there are a couple of bigger topics that are interesting to make people aware of. So firstly, we finalised three agenda decisions that relate to our new revenue recognition standard, IFRS 15. And all three submissions were to do with revenue recognition for term construction contracts, and in particular the question of whether revenue should be recognised at a point in time or over time. And I think they're interesting to look at, particularly obviously if you are looking at questions for such contracts, but I think also for other people applying IFRS 15, because what the agenda decisions do is really step through the application of some of the concepts of control that are in IFRS 15, which has broader applicability. The other thing we finalised was an agenda decision that confirms that entities are required to have a separate line item in the income statement comprised of interest income on financial assets that are measured at amortized cost and fair value through other comprehensive income. And that's a new requirement that's part of applying IFRS 9, so there was confirmation of that requirement in that agenda decision.
Well, that brings us to the end of the March podcast. Thank you, Sue, and thank you, Daryl. And as always, thank you to you, our listeners. Any feedback on these podcasts, please email communications@ifrs.org. The full summary of the board's discussion and decisions at the March meeting can be found in the ISB update on the IFRS Foundation's website. Thank you all very much.